what do you want to da da da?
I don't know. What do y'all think we should da da da?
Well, what did we da yesterday?
Yesterday.
All the dolls feel like the same doll these days.
I know.
Like, is ta-da Monday or Tuesday?
Ta-da is Thursday.
Oh no, I forgot to call my mom on her birthday.
Oh no!
No!
These days, nothing is normal and everything is weird. But you could still save big when you switch to Progressive. That won't change. Not ta-da or any da.
Quote ta-da at Progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Pritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode, we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some very special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi.
Hamari apni Delhi.
The pandemic forced schools to start taking classes online. While in one way, it helped boost a digital push in the education sector, it also brought out major gaps in this sector. The digital push was worse for students of government schools who did not have access to mobile phones to attend classes. With cases of COVID-19 increasing, the Delhi government had announced partial classes to be taken online with assignments being shared through IVR, WhatsApp, and online classes. With vaccine trials still ongoing, school students have had to work for an entire academic year online. To bridge this gap, non-governmental organizations and individuals are working to raise funds and collect old phones so that students who lack access to such facility can attend their classes. I have with me Saransh Baswani, co-founder of Sajha, an NGO based in Delhi which works across schools to bridge the gap for marginalized students and also work with parents to be active participants in schools.
Hi Saransh, welcome to Delhi Decoded. Thank you so much for joining us today on this episode.
Hi Pritika.
I believe, you know, you guys have had a very exciting few months. Could you briefly tell us about the work that you all do at Sajha?
Sure. So Pritika, our focus is primarily on enabling greater parental engagement in government schools of Delhi. In the last 5 years, we have worked with the Delhi government, and everyone knows about the model that the government has been able to create around parental engagement. The focus is on ensuring how do parents who might not have attended schools themselves, but have the capability and potential to actually impact the learning of the child. How do you sort of support them in taking up those initiatives? And so that's our focus area. We started off in 2013, worked for the last 7 years in Delhi. We have worked across East Delhi, North Delhi. We also worked with the Delhi government. So it's been some time that we've worked with parents of the government schools. And one of the key learnings and one of the key belief is parents have the ability, parents have the potential to actually impact learning of the child. It's important that we listen to them and we understand where they're coming from.
Absolutely. And I think that sort of, you know, the ability of parents playing a key role in education was brought out more than ever during this lockdown, because you had students that were permanently at home and, you know, you're going to pretty much have an entire academic session where they're going to be studying out of their houses. And as you mentioned also earlier, that, you know, there are a lot of parents who may not have gone to schools themselves. Could you tell us a bit about the steps that you had to take during this pandemic?
And Pritik, I think it's been a journey. And I think the first 3 months, April, May, June, I think the effects of lockdown were very harsh on families. A lot of them had to migrate. We actually received calls from parents asking us how can we help them sort of reach their village. Mm-hmm. Or we got calls from parents asking us how do they get the required ration or how do they get the required food? Where is the food available in schools? I think the first 3 months were just too harsh. And we were literally fighting each and every day, trying to ensure that we are able to reach out to more parents, provide them the required support that they're asking for. And interestingly, parents were also trying to understand what is happening around them. Children were at home, they had to be kept at home. What kind of activities do I do to actually ensure that my child stays at home and does not run out? While also trying to understand how do I get my livelihood going. I remember interestingly having a conversation with a parent where the parent said that these days they have stopped the consumption of milk because they don't have the money. So the tea that they drink is currently black, and that's something that they're giving out. So the situation was pretty bad during the first 3 months. And all the energies that we had were focused on ensuring that parents got the required support in terms of ration, in terms of livelihood, in terms of whatever we could. I think from there on, when the lockdown sort of opened up, there were changes. Parents moved towards focusing on the children. The idea was, how do I keep my child engaged at home? How do I ensure that they continue to learn? How do I even reach out to schools? How do I get the required textbook from the schools? Because a lot of the things that they got from schools weren't something that they got till that time. And so a lot of the gaps were around information. And so we sort of were working towards providing the the required information to the parent. And it could be related to different things, books, school, scholarship, even getting my child admitted into the government schools. And interestingly, this year, anecdotally, we know a lot of the help parents were seeking us were around getting the child admitted to the government school. And these were parents who were earlier sending the kids to the private school, who were now wanting to send their kids to the government school. So we will see a jump in enrollment in government schools also. And so that was something that we were doing then. I think realization also started coming in, there are challenges that parents were facing. While the state government were taking initiatives to ensure that parents are provided with the required learning content at home. For example, the schools were giving out worksheets that the parents could sort of work with the child on. But how do I get the worksheets? If I have not been to sort of school and I don't know what to do with the worksheet, how do I even work with my child on the worksheet? Our focus from there on sort of went towards supporting parents on undertaking certain activities at home, preparing a schedule, ensuring that the worksheet given is used, or even if they were looking at some, say, EdTech solution, how do I ensure that my child is able to read well? Is there an EdTech solution that I could potentially use? Sort of recommending them certain things. And so that's been the journey. I think for us also, it moved from the idea that we are able to support parents with basic needs to now saying, okay, how do they work with their children to ensure that they're able to impact their lives?
While it's really, you know, simple for somebody to say, okay, let's take education online, and the way schools adapted to that was great.
Yes.
But when you're talking about government schools, it also means that, you know, most of these parents and students will not have access to something as simple as a phone.
Yes.
Forget a laptop.
Right.
That's a very far-fetched idea.
Right.
You know, even the challenge of if the parent is stepping out to work, the phone goes with them.
Yes.
So, you know, what are the timing of schools and things like that? So in between all of that, I believe you guys started a fundraiser for arranging smartphones for families
that did not
have. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the things that we observed, while there were certain challenges, I would say varying degree of challenges. One of the parents called us on our helpline and we asked her what was the challenge that she was facing. And she interestingly said, Tata Sky mein recharge khatam ho gaya hai. Can you sort of get the Tata Sky recharged so that my child can stay at home and continue to watch the television instead of running out? Now, that's something that you could never imagine, that this is something also that the parents are asking for, given there is nothing that can hold the child at home and television was the only thing that the parent had. So while there were set of challenges that were coming along with this, the other one specifically for children who were, and specifically for girls who were in higher grades, I think for them getting access to a phone and continuing to learn at home was becoming really difficult. Supporter of ours reached out to us, Anjali. We had a conversation thinking about what could we do here, and we realized that there are people with a lot of used smartphones. Can we sort of ask them to donate their smartphones, convert it into a phone which is usable, and try and sort of get them out to specifically girls who are in grade 10 or grade 12, so that they can continue with their education. And so that's a campaign that we run. We got good support. We were able to sort of give out around 15 phones. Now we piloted it, got some good results. Now we are saying we need to sort of move up. We have recently sort of moved up to around 25 phones. Also talking to different companies, retail distributors also saying if there's potential for them to donate phones also. I think the demand clearly exists. People are looking at, and I think one of the key realization also, Pritika, is that it's not as if children or girls don't want to study. They want to be connected. They want to be connected to schools. Parents are looking to continue to provide them the required support. It's just that the resources don't exist. So given all of this scenario, I think that for us, it was good value add that we could potentially do was to understand and sort of figure out how do we get the phones to these families. So that's something that we started out. It's currently still ongoing. You can donate your phone or you can also contribute money and we'll try and sort of buy phones from them. And we're also sort of continuing to reach out to companies and retailers to give us phones in larger number.
All right. That's very interesting. What are the other sort of challenges that, or like, you know, some you were mentioning that parents continue to reach out to you. What are the other kind of challenges that you've seen on the ground that came up this time period?
Very interestingly, I think the education moving online and its sort of relation with phones is very visible. I think what we don't realize, and that's something that we clearly saw was a big challenge, was I think schools function as a safe place for children. Parents are able to send their kids to the school. The school sort of functions as a safe place. Children are in the school. While parents can then go out and work on jobs that might not be suitable for children. So for example, if I'm a rag picker, I could potentially send my child to the school. The child remains in the school in the safe place and the father goes out or the mother goes out and sort of collects. The lack of a physical safe space was a big blow for the families. And we did observe that children were now going out with their parents, with their families, doing odd jobs. We also observed children now sort of trying to make some kind of living doing odd jobs. And that was a big challenge that we saw in families. These are families, for them, it's hard to sort of think about continuing to provide support for education. And so they had to sort of take their children with them on the livelihoods. Our assumption is when the schools open up also, these children will suffer the most, having not gone to school, having faced certain kinds of challenges. The other big set, Pritika, was while there was support, right, there was an online class or you could get worksheets from the schools, there was no support for parents to actually then work on the worksheet. If I don't know how to read or if I don't know how to sort of work with my child, how do I even support? A lot of the pressure was in the family on sort of ensuring that the child continues to study, but there's no support for the family to ensure that the child could study. And so while parents came into limelight in terms of their role as a teacher, although it's hard for parents to act as teacher, and as I think the expectation was too much for parents to handle also. And so I think the data that we had, a lot of the parents simply said that they gave their phones to the child and that was the most that they did for the in terms of the education. And so when we started sort of having conversations with them and understanding potentially what else could they do, and they, I think that is when you try and understand, oh, there are things that parents could do, and it is because there's no support being provided, they're not able to sort of talk through that. And so that's something that we again then focused on, saying, how do we work with the parent on not just giving out the phones, but preparing a schedule or ensuring that the child sits at the right time to study? There is a schedule for even playing games or attending classes or doing something else. And so all of that then sort of came along.
So this was all done through school management committees?
This, Pritika, I think so. While the school management committee was functioning, ensuring that the children got their admission, I think what we also realized that it was harder for parents to now walk out of the home to the SMC member's house or even have a conversation with them. I think what we did was we launched a helpline wherein you could call. And the helpline was manned by people from the community. And these could be parents who were already sending the kids to the government school or other kinds of volunteers also. So, potentially, you were talking to someone who was within your community and trying to understand your concerns and sort of trying to provide some solution.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's great. In such a situation, how do you see the school management committee changing? I mean, the way it functions. How do you see it changing? Because the last 1 year, I'm guessing it's taken a step back for sure.
Yes.
How do you see that changing?
Pritika, they deserve all the praise in terms of the work that they did during the pandemic. I think during the pandemic, SMC members went out, ensured that children knew about what was happening in the school. They actually enrolled a lot of students in the government school. So I think they put up a lot of efforts in ensuring that children stay connected to the school. What was lacking, again, there's a need for direct parent support, reaching out to them directly, trying to sort of have conversations and trying to listen to parents. I think one of the big things that now need to happen with the SMCs also, I think, is a close listening to parents and then trying to understand what kind of support they need. And I think also realizing that given the nature of education is changing, given children are at home, the support is not just educational in need, but the support becomes much more wider in terms of health, in terms of development, in terms of actually addressing key concerns that parents are raising. So I think then since the nature of education is changing, the SMC members also need to sort of be supported, understanding that, and then providing the parents the required support.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, yes, of course, there'll be a lot of support that the SMCs will also need at this time. But if you had to, you know, sort of, I know it'll be sort of a little, it's difficult to do, but you know, what are the top three things that you think are really needed at this point for schools and, like, you know, for students to function properly in such a scenario?
I think we need to clearly outline a way to open up schools.
From the way Delhi is seeing it, I don't think the most classes are going to go to school at all this semester. I mean, this academic year. I don't think that's going to happen for Delhi.
True. And you don't see it. And so I think a lot of the, given that you don't see any clarity on when the schools could open up, we need to clearly start figuring out some way of actually ensuring that schools open up for some of the family members. I think the function of the school as a safe space is something that families miss, children miss. I think that's something that needs to be at. So one, we need to figure out how the schools will be opened up. Two, I think we need to create a much effective support system for parents. So and what has happened, given the nature of the pandemic, teachers had also work related to pandemic that they had to undertake. And so now teachers are also overburdened. How do we, in that scenario, ensure that it is not just through teachers that the parents are getting support, but actually then they are also, there is other kind of support system for the parent, and specifically for younger children. While for grades 9 to 12, they are able to self-study, they are able to ensure that they can connect with teachers and understand. Children of younger grades, grade 1, 2, 3, or even younger children in the Anganwadi,
They have no idea what's
For them, parent is the mother, the father is the person who actually helps them or supports them with a lot of things. And we all know that in the younger age is when a lot of the brain development happens. And given the lack of support there for parents, it could actually lead to long-term impact. So I think figuring out how do we provide effective support specifically for children at a younger age and for their parents, figuring out ways on sort of opening schools. And if I had one wish to make, Pritika, I would say just give every child a mobile phone. I think no child should suffer because he or she does not have a mobile phone. I know that's a big wish, but that's something that you clearly see, that I did not have a smartphone and somebody else has it. Sort of stark inequality that the child is clearly seeing. I think it requires some sort of intervention from our side.
Absolutely. And I think it's an intervention that I think can completely happen as well.
Yes.
I think if we'll work towards it, I think it can totally happen. So.
Yes. And it takes a lot of political willingness. It takes a lot of social willingness to do it. But I think the time has come to realize that your phone should not be essentially a way to quantify your dignity. So if I don't have a phone, I am clearly not belonging to a certain class. I'm not even able to learn. And not learn in the sense of doing things every day, but learn, be engaged with the academics, the schools. And so in no way that should be the case.
True, very true. Here's hoping that you're, you know, with the year coming to an end, really hoping that your one wish for this year comes true soon. Thank you so much for joining us today on Delhi Decoded, Saransh.
Thanks, Pradeya. Thank you so much.
That's all from me this season. Please like, subscribe and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at HD Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. It's a wrap from me on Delhi Decoded for this season. Until then, stay safe and healthy. Wishing you all a Merry Christmas and a very Happy New Year.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.